Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
In the meantime, as a historic New York State budget emerges from the shadows, and it was hashed out deep in the shadows of Byzantine Albany, most of the media is only covering it as an income tax hike. So let's begin this week by taking a step back and giving a little more context here, and this will affect the trains and the buses as well. The state budget that would take effect April 1st, Wednesday, increases total state spending by about $10 billion, or about 9%. Education spending goes up slightly, but health care is slashed by more than $2 billion. Three upstate prisons will close. Tuition assistance is preserved at present rates. New York City gets $328 million back in municipal aid that it was going to lose. Mayor Bloomberg lobbied hard for that. The proposed taxes on diet sodas and music downloads are out. No iPod or diet soda tax. But the star rebates on property taxes are also out. They will end. As for the income tax hike, it goes up one percentage point for singles making $200,000 a year and gradually up to two percentage points for people making $500,000 or more. So a half-million earner, after deductions, will pay $10,000 more in state income tax. Make a million, it's another $20,000 in state income tax. New York will now have the same top rate as New Jersey before you decide to flee. So what does it mean? Well, New York State Public Radio Capital Bureau Chief Karen DeWitt is here, as is WNYC transportation reporter Matthew Sherman, to talk about the transit piece. Good morning, Karen. Good morning, Matt.
Hi, Brian. I just have to make one comment.
Yes.
If it's gone to the MTA going to cut radio telethons to keep service, we are in a sad state of affairs, wouldn't you say?
Wait a minute. The MTA is going to do what? Like,
well,
Pledge Week?
You just announced that you're going to have people call in and make the case for their services not to be cut, it seems like.
Well, you know what?
Degrading in this
state. Well, or maybe they're getting better, Karen, because they set up these public hearings so that hardly any of the public can actually come. It's a lot easier to pick up your telephone or go to your computer. And and we do know that MTA board members listen to this show. Anyway, what's the total state budget for the new fiscal year? People never hear the top line number. What's the top line number?
Governor Patterson and legislative leaders are giving out, at least, is $131.8 billion. And it's an 8.7% increase from last year. Some other numbers say it's a 10% increase. Now, some of that is all the billions of dollars in federal stimulus money. But it's a bit shocking considering the recession that we're in and the fact that Governor Patterson, since he became governor, actually the day he became governor, said we had to cut spending in this budget. It holds the line on the growth of spending, but it doesn't really cut spending overall. So that's a little bit of a surprise, but I think under the circumstances, maybe not so much. I mean, really, what could they do when they don't want people to lose their jobs?
Well, they don't want people to lose their jobs. They don't want people to lose their health care. They don't want people to lose their school funding. But why does it have to go up 9% from last year in these fiscal times? Is that just enough to keep up with inflation, or is it something other than that?
Well, it's about three times the rate of inflation. It's just difficult when you get right down to it to cut all these things. There's a lot of strong interest groups, and also some of them, as we said, are programs. People need their health care. People need their jobs. So they really are in a bind over this. But it does contradict all the things that Governor Patterson had said about cutting spending. In the end, he wasn't able to get as many cuts, I think, as he wanted to.
The governor did talk the other day about 9,000 state worker layoffs. Is that happening?
I don't know the status of that. That hasn't come out in the budget. Later today, I'm hoping to call the unions. I haven't heard anything from them, which makes me think that they're probably having some kind of negotiations with the governor's office because they're not complaining at this point. So maybe they will be able to work something out. I know that thousands of unionized workers are coming to Albany for a big rally tomorrow. Most of them are pretty mad at the governor. So
the unions are mad at the governor, even though spending continues to rise 9%. Mm-hmm. There is a major restructuring of Medicaid payments. Maybe that's the biggest change under this budget, to save $2.3 billion. And I gather that it shifts payments from more expensive inpatient services to cheaper preventive care. I know hospitals don't like that, but how will patients experience the change if they're on Medicaid?
Not really really sure at this point how it's all going to work out. I mean, I don't know if it would really affect the patients as much unless the hospitals, if they're threatening, say they're going to have to cut services and more people in the emergency rooms. And actually, I haven't really heard that much from the hospital industry either on this budget. I mean, granted, all this stuff came out last night. You know, I mean, Sunday night is not the best time to release this stuff, which is a big reason why they released it Sunday night when people are distracted.
No kidding.
Which tends to think that it's not quite as bad as the hospitals had feared, because if it's very bad, I mean, we immediately heard from all the groups that were angry about this, like the business councils, very against the taxes, some of the education groups, they wanted that CFE lawsuit, the state to honor its commitment to that, and they're going to phase that in a little bit.
So a little less aid to the New York City public schools than it's a little less addition to the New York City public schools than there would have been under the Campaign for Fiscal Equity settlement, but it just gets phased in over more years. I guess one of the questions to answer, and maybe we'll get the answer later in the day, and maybe you will in Albany, does this shift away from expensive inpatient services mean worse care for people who are really sick, even if it means better preventive care? And I guess it'll take time to figure that out.
But because, as we said, the hospitals make the line that, yes, it does, but is that really true? Maybe they will just be able to cope with some of it. But yeah, it's really going to be time will tell. It would be nice if, ideally, in some of the years where they had money, they could have shifted this without cutting some kinds of health care, but I've noticed in Albany they never do that. It really takes a crisis for them to make any real changes.
Oh, and we're not in a crisis now. I forgot that.
That's right.
Now, we're going to come back to you in a second, Karen, and talk about these taxes and what's the right numerical lens really through which to look at them. But Matthew Sherman, our transportation reporter, why don't you shout out for our listeners some of the biggest changes in service, we'll call them cuts rather than changes, that would occur if there is no deal to rescue the MTA. And then we'll take some of the calls that people are turning up with on our strap hanger slam to argue that their route should be saved. I've heard 20 bus lines. Is that an accurate number?
24, if you count the express buses, actually.
Oh, to be eliminated altogether.
Altogether. And if you count the number of bus lines that are going to be truncated, rerouted, reduced hours, that sort of thing, I come up with 86 total. So bus riders are going to be hit really hard. The thing is, there are fewer of them. But there are so many bus routes out there that this is actually a small percentage of them. In general, also, buses, Brian, are very inefficient from a transit planner's point of view. If you spend a buck on the subway, or $2, you're paying for about 80% of the costs of running the subway, for example. This comes out of your pocket as opposed to out-of-state taxes or what have you. Whereas in buses, it's more like 35 cents on the dollar, 40 cents on the dollar, the rest being made up in state subsidies.
So we're looking at the M6 in Manhattan, the M8, the M10, the 18, the 27, the 30, the X25. Do you know these routes? Eliminating weekend service on the M21, 22, and 50. In Brooklyn, eliminating the B23 and 25 and 37, 39, 51, and 75. In the Bronx, the BX4 goes away, the 14, the 20, the 34. Do you know these routes, folks? In Queens, the Q26 would disappear, the 56, the 74 and 75, and 84. The buses between Queens and Manhattan, the QM22 and QM23. So that's just a bit of the list, Matthew.
And Brian, you know, the amazing thing about the MTA, the reason why we love such large bureaucracies is that they can crunch their numbers like no one else. And I have right in front of me a list that they put out showing exactly how many riders each of these bus lines have, what their alternative routes are, because the MTA's point here is that, you know, the MTA has been very contrite about having to do service cuts. But, you know, it says that there are alternatives for these people, and the number of riders is relatively small.
Are entire subway lines still to be eliminated?
Yes, certainly. Again, if there's no rescue package, and even if there is, they aren't guaranteeing that they're putting these service cuts back. But the Z line would go away entirely in the W. The G would be truncated. G hasn't been running out to Forest Hills very much lately anyway because of construction. The N would run over the Manhattan Bridge late at night, for example. And then also off-peak, every subway line, pretty much every lettered subway line, you'd see the spacing between the trains lengthen a little bit instead of every 8 minutes, for example, every 10 minutes.
All right. So listeners, join our Strap Hanger Slam. You heard that list of routes. Maybe it was new to you and you recognize your bus line or your train line. Call and say why yours should be saved, if only some can be, if there's some kind of partial rescue plan. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, with WNYC transportation reporter Matthew Sherman and our New York State Public Radio Capital Bureau Chief Karen DeWitt. And Karen, let's talk about these taxes, the income taxes first. People are using all kinds of different hyperbolic numbers to describe it. I think it's most clearly stated the way I put it before. Tell me if you think this paints an accurate picture.
Okay.
That it goes up one percentage point for singles making $200,000 a year and gradually up to 2 percentage points for people making $500,000 or more. So the top increase is that a $500,000 earner, and that's a $500,000 after your deductions, will pay 2% of their income more in taxes. That's $10,000 in state income tax more on a $500,000 of income, 2% of their income more than before. Make $1 million, then it's another $20,000, and that this is the same top rate as New Jersey.
Yeah, that sounds pretty much like it. One thing to point out, what it actually does is restore the old rates. For years, if you made more money, you had to pay more income taxes in New York State and the nation. It's only since, you know, I'd say the Reagan era, the 80s and the mid-1990s under former Governor George Pataki in New York, that they eliminated those top rates. Because right now, until this budget law is passed anyway, I think the top rate is like $40,000. So if you make $40,000 or $1 million, you pay the same top tax rate. So it's actually kind of restoring something that we had always had. And I guess, you know, politicians are thinking maybe we let the rich get away too easily or something. We got to take that money back. The other problem is, though, there's fewer rich people in New York after the crash on Wall Street and taking the bonuses back and all the layoffs and the things that are happening. So will it really bring in as much money as they think it will? I mean, the estimates are $4 billion over the 3 years that this temporary tax is going to take place. So we'll see. If you know, Wall Street rebounds, it may bring that much in. But New York State government revenues are so dependent on Wall Street that who knows if it will really bring in that much money. But it did seem like something that they had to do. They were under tremendous pressure to raise this top rate when they were asking other people and poorer people to sacrifice in this budget.
And listeners, let's use our comments page for this because we're using the phones for the Strap Hanger Slam. If you're in those tax brackets, is this confiscatory as you see it? Is this fair? Will it make you leave the state? Can't go to New Jersey. They have the same top income tax rate. Do post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show and tell us.
I was just going to say another point I'd make. Yes, that is upstate where I live, those amounts of money are considered rich because the cost of living is much lower. But in the New York City area, the lower end of those incomes, that's not rich. In some ways, that's just making your payments. So
well, but the lowest end of this would be $200,000 a year, and it's a 1 percentage point increase. So that would be $2,000 more. If you're making, so this is the question for people, and it's, you know, you tell us. If you're making $200,000 a year in these times with the other sacrifices that other people are making, losing their jobs and whatever it is, if you're still making $200,000 a year, is it too much for you to kick in another $2,000 a year to New York State? Now, Karen, I will give that one of the things that makes this a more complicated ethical question is the fact that the total budget is going up 9% rather than going down.
Yes. I could see how some people might be a little bit resentful having to pay $2,000 a year more in taxes when the budget is going up in a year of a deep recession and, you know, with all the rhetoric we came to expect it was going to go down.
All right. You ready, both of you, to listen to some strap hanger slam calls?
Absolutely.
What should we save? Brian in the East Village. Hi, Brian. You're on WNYC.
Oh, hi. I'm just calling to make the case to save the M8 bus line, which goes from the west side along 8th Street to Alphabet City and then returns back along 9th Street. You know, the Alphabet City and Lower East Side are not very well served by subways. We have a lot of older people here because of the public housing. And, you know, they say that that line isn't used very much. But, you know, if you go at 8:30 in the morning on that M8 bus, I've been in standing room only situations many times. So, you know, it just seems kind of cruel to just cut the East Village off from one of the few ways they have to get around.
What's the alternative to the M8 if it does go out of business?
There's buses that go up and down the avenues like Avenue A and Avenue B and then turn on 14th Street. So you could do that. But there's no really easy way to get from the East Village to the West Village unless you were to, say, go up to 14th Street and take the L train or maybe get the bus on Houston Street. But, you know, right in the middle of the East Village, and particularly for people who live farther over, like Avenue C and stuff, it's a long walk, you know, so I don't know. It seems like you need a route that goes somewhere between Houston and 14th Street.
Brian, thank you very much. Mike in the Bronx, you're on WNYC.
Hello, Brian.
What's your bus line?
The bus line is the 10 bus in the Bronx. They are only going to cut off the service during the midnight hours, so it's not a real big trimming of service, but there's no real alternative during the midnight hours. I know that not many people ride that bus, but some people do who either go home or go to work during the midnight hours. It would it provides a link from the subway, from the number one subway up into the Riverdale area. And it's only one bus running the route during those hours. So
all right. So, Mike, I'm going to leave it there. And Matthew Sherman, let me throw that one to you. What do they do? What do they want people to do if they are? I mean, we're the city that never sleeps, right? We know from our ratings that people work all kinds of shifts and people are up at all kinds of hours in New York City. So if you're going home at 2 in the morning and the BX10 isn't there anymore, what are you supposed to do?
Brian, I don't have the details on the BX10. Maybe I'll try to look at them while I'm talking with you. But in general, the caller hits upon exactly the point here, which is that people on the fringes, either, you know, the fringes of Manhattan, literally in the Far East side, the Far East Village, or people who work late at night or are coming home from partying late at night, are really going to be hit the hardest because they use the transit system when few other people do. All subways, for example, between 2 and 5 in the morning, instead of operating every 20 minutes, will be operating every 30 minutes. So you're going to have to wait longer for those trains. So it won't affect a whole lot of people, but the people whom it does affect are in some ways, you know, the most vulnerable.
Though there you could say, okay, 10 minutes. But that's a lot different than making service completely stop to parts of the city via bus that there's no other way to even get to by public transportation.
Brian, let me, I did find the chart here that the MTA gave out. The Bronx 10, eliminate overnight service. Generally, it lists which alternatives. Under the Bronx 10, there is no alternative.
Tahila in Flatbush, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. Yeah, I'm calling because my mother uses the B23 regularly, and that is the only way to get between Cortelyou and Marlborough Road to Borough Park. So it's the only connection between two sections of Brooklyn. Also, she goes to the east, to Flatbush Avenue that way. She doesn't drive. She's an old woman. She's 73 years old. And this is her only way of going to different sections of Brooklyn. It's very wrong to cut these services.
Matthew, do you have the alternative list there for people who use the B23?
I do, Brian. It says here that you can try the B8 or the B16. I'm not exactly sure.
The B8 is nearly a mile away. It's three-quarters of a mile away. So she would have to walk three-quarters of a mile away to use the B8.
And the B16.
The B16, that is far away. I don't know where that is, but that's definitely not within a few blocks.
Tahila, thank you very much. Chris in Astoria. Chris, you're on WNYC.
Yeah, hi. I'm calling about the N&W line. I really feel like the service has really been lousy all the time. And, you know, one thing that they do is there's been construction. I've lived here for about 10 years, and construction's been on weekends for like 75% of the time. And, you know, presumably to make the service better during the week. But then when you get on in the week, I get on at the third stop from Ditmars Boulevard, and it's already crowded and packed, and there's not enough trains.
Well, one thing, you know, I should say, Brian, when I first moved here, I heard that the N and the R stand for the never and the rarely.
That
Ouch.
Is true.
The W would go away. The W goes up to Astoria, or no, it goes out more toward along Queens Boulevard.
The W does go up to Astoria. It sort of parallels the N and R up there. It would be replaced on that end by the Q. The Q would extend up there, and then it will affect local service on the R line as well.
Yeah.
So they're trying to make up for that in some sort of way.
I mean, one more point about the 20 and 30 minute late night delay. When I take that train home late at night, it is packed, and 20 to 30 minutes, and even on the weekends, it's like you might as well be on there during rush hour.
Chris, thank you very much. Can we get one more in here? How about Jimmy in the Bronx? Jimmy, you're on WNYC.
Yes, I want to say, why don't they stop building the extension, the 7 line, and why don't they stop the Second Avenue line?
Because Manhattan and Midtown generally are so well served compared to the outer boroughs.
Yes.
Well, that's a good point. It's rarely argued actually out in public because there are just so many constituencies out there supporting the Second Avenue subway, for example. I should say that the number 7 line extension is supposed to be paid entirely by real estate taxes that the city is going to be getting from new development on the far west side. Second Avenue subway, the justification is we have to relieve the crowding on the 4, 5, 6 line, which is just several times over capacity. But those are expensive projects, no question about it.
Karen, I know you live in the Albany area. You work in the Albany area for public radio around the state covering the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a deal in the works? This may all sound, Byzantine to you, but don't they need to know if there is...
Actually, I find it totally fascinating, honestly. I would just say for all these people who are worried, I think there's a better chance that they will have a bailout deal on the MTA. Now that the logjam over the state budget is broken and they've proved that they can come to agreement with that, I mean, people were despairing of any kind of agreement because things were in such chaos during pretty much the whole month of March over the budget and the disarray with the Senate Democrats.
Don't they need to know if there is a transit deal before finalizing an overall state budget? It seems that they would need to know how much this is going to cost.
Well, they said that they can do it later, but they need to do it right around this week. So they could agree on it any day now. I think there is a better chance now that this could come together than it seemed last week when they seemed to be kind of shrugging their shoulders and saying, oh, well, let the MTA board vote. Maybe we'll get something sometime. We have until summer. But there seems to be more urgency now. Once things kind of get rolling here, I think if you can get them, you don't have to use too much of a train analogy. Once the train starts rolling, then maybe you get the momentum to get some of these other deals.
Well, might it pull into the station, Matthew, with some of these service cuts and not others? Or is the MTA really hoping for an all or nothing thing if they get that payroll tax on businesses in the MTA region?
Officially, their stance is we'll revisit the service cuts, we'll revisit the fare hikes. They've already said that they will impose some sort of fare hike no matter what, something more along the line of 8% as opposed to 25%. They might choose this opportunity to say, hey, these are really inefficient lines, really inefficient bus routes. We can find alternatives. So everything is still on the table.
Or maybe we can tax one of America's largest cash crops, which currently exists only in the black market. And that's our next topic. I think you can figure out what it is. Karen DeWitt, State Capitol Bureau Chief for New York State Public Radio.
Glad I'm not going to be around for this next discussion.
No, you're not. Thank you very much. You'll just have to sit back and take a long... Never mind.
Yes.
And listen via the web. WNYC Transportation Correspondent Matthew Sherman,
thanks
you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks to all of you for participating in our Strap Hanger Slam. And, President Obama got this question about this untaxed cash crop in his online chat on Friday, and he just dismissed it. But we're going to use it to start a conversation rather than stop one. Stay tuned.